Hey there, M-Critters. This is Scott Weingart for the M-Crit Podcast. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about a procedure. There's been a bunch of drafts I've had for months or years on all the procedures, and each time I look at them, I'm like, oh, God, I can't do this. I need a full video to really explain this, and I just keep putting it off. Well, the time has come. I'm going to get rid of these. Now, some of them I'm actually going to have videos, like the one we're going to talk about today. Some of them I'll just have to deal with it with just words, and maybe a video will come in the future. I think perfect is the enemy of good on this one, and it's what's kept me from doing these. So we're going to bang off a lot of these. So today, pigtails for pleural issues. I mean, you could stick a pigtail pretty much everywhere, but I think the utility for emergency medicine is enormous. And now some of you are probably already doing pigtails, and you're like, yeah, this is old hat. I think you'll still find tips and tricks that are make this worth listening to. Some of you are like, what the hell's a pigtail? That's something IR does. I put in chest tubes, goddammit. And for you, I think this should be a real paradigm changer because putting in chest tubes for most of the things we do, it's barbaric and mean and unnecessary. So we'll get there. Let's have a word from our sponsor. Two sponsors today. First sponsor is the Reanimate ED ECMO Conference. I have two tickets left. I'm going to give them away for half price. If you're interested, you will get something on the mailing list in a few hours after this episode comes out. So make sure you're on the mailing list, and then I'll say how to get in touch with me if you want one of those two tickets for half price. That's half off. This is September 17th and 18th in San Diego, so like 2 weeks from now. So that's why we're cutting the prices so drastically on these last two tickets. So if you're interested, let me know. And then the second sponsor is the Recess Crisis Manual. We were low on stock for like a year and a half because we just ran out of the paper, the waterproof paper. So I haven't advertised for it. But now we have them in. If you order now, you get them right away as opposed to the poor souls who had to wait. And again, I had nothing to do with the publishing of this book, just the creation of it. So I had nothing to do with this, but people had to wait for a long time for their orders to actually get fulfilled. That's not the case anymore. If you want one of these, order now and you will get them as quick as the mail can provide them. Okay. Let's get back to pigtails. All right, sit right down, my youngins, and I will tell you a story, a tale of a pig, a pig's tail. Let's get into it. So these are essentially 14 French chest tubes for the purposes we're using them on in the lungs. But the tip looks like a pig's tail. It curves in on itself after you take out its internal dilator, which gives more sights and angles for drainage, and it may or may not be less annoying to the lung tissue. These are placed percutaneously, you know, with Selinger technique, which makes them super nice. So they're both smaller and less traumatic to place. And this makes them, in my mind, more desirous for the patient, because if that size, and 14 French is the one we use, is big enough, then there's no reason to go on full on cutting into skin and spreading with Kelly's and getting in there with a chest tube. It doesn't serve any additional purpose, and it's a lot more painful, and it's a lot more painful even after it's in. You know, a big chest tube hurts, and it hurts until it comes out. And obviously, there's a lot less of a mark on the patient's skin after the end of this all. You know, this is essentially a slightly bigger needle puncture as opposed to a scar they're going to have from their chest tube. So in many ways, it is superior. So who gets these? Well, any pneumothorax that you were going to place a chest tube in my mind, should be a pigtail. I don't think it's really acceptable anymore to put a chest tube in for a pneumothorax unless it's a patient, you know, peri-arrest, who you're just doing a crash finger thoracostomy and then following it with a chest tube. Even on those folks, hint, hint, I actually would place a pigtail through that hole once I've relieved the pneumothorax, if you were sure there was no blood. But that's the first category. Now, we're not going to go into this episode of whether you ever need to place any tube in a pneumothorax or whether you should just be doing needle drainage or simple observation. That's another show, or maybe that's a show that will be covered by Farkas and the IBCC, and then I'll never have to do that show. So I'll just leave it as pneumothoraces you were planning on putting a chest tube in should now be pigtails. And then the next big category is pleural effusions, and these are pleural effusions that you feel are big enough to drain. And now, you might say, oh, well, some of those that are big enough to drain, I drain with thoracentesis. I'm going to get to that at the end of the episode. But sneak peek, I don't believe in thoracentesis, but we'll get there. We'll get there. So this pleural effusion, you want to drain. You would have put a chest tube in the past. Now you're going to place a pigtail instead. Now, who not to do these in? Now, this landscape is constantly changing, so these categories may be different if you listen to the redo of this show, you know, a year and a half, 2 years from now. But for now, in general, I probably wouldn't place in an empyema, though I just saw a paper demonstrating that it's okay for empyema. But for now, because I don't think your pulmonologists upstairs are going to be happy with you, if you know it's an empyema, then you probably should place something bigger than the 14 French. And again, that might change. And then the one I know most trauma surgeons get pissed at, though folks like Kenji Inaba are actively doing the research work right now to see if it's acceptable. But right now, if you have a hemothorax, I probably would not place a pigtail. I'd probably put something bigger. Now, that doesn't mean it needs to be open. We have percutaneous chest tubes. You know, the one we have is the Thalquic. I could place a 20 French chest tube percutaneously, and I could do that for either an empyema or a hemothorax. I think 20 French is plenty big enough for hemothorax. I think we have enough evidence to say that. So I could do that without being open, but that's not a pigtail for right now. So there you go. That's who I would and would not do it in. The next thing you need to establish is a site for where you're going to enter with the pigtail. Now, unless this is a tension or, you know, the complete collapse of a lung, in which case I could pretty much go anywhere, I'm finding my site with ultrasound. And what I will start with is I will have the patient like a 45-degree head-up position, and I will have them just lying flat on their back. And then I will look in the safety triangle. You guys all remember the safety triangle from chest tube placement, right? It's essentially bounded on the bottom by the fifth intercostal space, and then posteriorly by the lat dorsi, and anteriorly by the pec muscle. And, you know, that triangle, which is essentially, and here's a pro tip to keep you from being made really sad when you stick a chest tube through the liver or spleen. You know, the landmarking by nipple or stuff like that is totally dependent on where the patient's nipples are. A landmark I've always found is utterly safe is if you're in the axilla or, you know, depending on what your patient's axilla looks like, maybe one space below. But if you're in that area of the axilla, you're pretty much always safe. And that's a consistent landmark. That's a landmark that you're not going to get hosed on if the patient has, slightly droopy breast tissue that makes your nipple line disappear, or, you know, you're draping the patient and you're not figuring out what's going on. And that's another pro tip. Pick your site before you drape, because you could get really messed up with all the drapes on. You lose your external landmarks, and that's where bad stuff happens. So for me, if I can, if I have what I call a landing zone for your percutaneous pleural device placement, then, you know, in that safety triangle with the patient sitting up, then that's wonderful, and I'll go for that. And a lot of times for the pneumothoraces, that's going to be a perfectly acceptable site. Now, let's say there is, if you're looking for fluid, there's not enough fluid up there, much more fluid lower down, or if it's a pneumothorax, you know, in this case, it's anterior, and so there's really not much lateral, then you gotta change stuff up. And so you're gonna try to find a pocket via ultrasound where you're well away from the diaphragm and you have enough of a landing zone that needle placement is going to be safe, which means you need at least a couple centimeters of fluid there in order to make it safe to stick a needle in there. Now, let's say you can't find a landing zone by repositioning the patient, by looking at other places. We'll talk about at the end what to do in those circumstances. But for me, at least, I know some people would just stick the needle in anyway and think like it's not going to cause much damage to the lung. I don't like doing that. So we'll talk about at the end what to do when there's no landing zone. But if you could find a landing zone that you know is safe, then that's fine. Sometimes the landing zone, you'll find a big pocket of fluid lower down than that safety triangle. And, you know, then the diaphragm every so often comes close to it. In those cases, I think you're obliged to do real-time placement under ultrasound guidance. If you could find a nice safe landing zone, you're totally away from the diaphragm, there's no stuff that's gonna get in your way, then I think it's okay to just mark the site, not move the patient at all, and then do it without real-time ultrasound guidance. If you're shooting for a pneumothorax and the only spot is anterior, then you can absolutely put a pigtail there. I am usually reluctant. I'm not as pleased with the safety of this in terms of people that aren't as experienced not destroying really viable and vital structures in the anterior chest. I almost always like to be lateral, but you can do it. Just make sure, and this is key for both needle decompression and for pigtail placement, is that you're well lateral of that midclavicular line, the real midclavicular line. See, the problem is that people think the clavicle stops at the crease, your crease between your arm and your body, and then that puts you way too medial. The clavicle extends well out to the acromion. And so, you know, it's always more lateral than you think. And I think the safest way to be is, you know, find that transition spot on the clavicle where it goes from flat to arch back. That's the spot I also go for subclavian lines. And be lateral of that. And this might place you, like, even more lateral than the midclavicular line. That's okay. But medial is bad. Don't do that. Wherever you're going to go, the next thing to do is just pick your spot, find the rib under that spot. And then what I do is I will make, with Sharpie, an X, a small X on the rib, and then a line at the top border of that rib. And, you know, you could forget about the X. I just like it there because it marks my site, you know, unambiguously. And then what you want to do is you want to put the ultrasound on color mode, and actually make sure there are no vessels in the interspace you're going to go. So you're going to be going right over that rib. You want to make sure that the intercostals haven't drooped down into that space. Because, you know, this concept of them always being tucked under the rib is only in the textbook pictures. In real life, they could be anywhere they want in that interspace between the two ribs. And this has been studied, I think, a couple of times. And so you really want to throw on the color flow and just make sure you're not going to be poking a needle through those intercostals. I mean, it's less dangerous when you're doing it with an open chest tube technique because ostensibly the Kelly tip is going to just move the vessel out of the way as opposed to puncturing through. But a needle will actually just puncture right through that intercostal. And that would be bad, especially if your patient is anticoagulated or on antiplatelet medications. It's going to bleed and be annoying. So just take 10 seconds and look with the Doppler. All right, so now you have your landing zone. I like to anesthetize, you know, before I get full sterile for the actual procedure. So I'll take the site I'm going to go at, and I'll swipe with a ChloraPrep. You know, I'll broadly clean out the site with a ChloraPrep, just as I would for doing the actual procedure, but I won't actually put them in full drape and everything like that. And I'll have a sterile tip anesthesia setup, you know, so I'll have 10 cc's of 2% lido with epi. I always like this for any, whether it be chest tube or pigtail, because you're getting a higher potency lidocaine, and then the epi allows that to be safely given at higher doses than you would without the epi. So I see no reason not to go 2% with epi. And what I'll do is first give a big skin wheel near the top of that rib. I'll actually give a whole bunch in the muscle right under that skin wheel. I'll hit the rib, the top edge of the rib. I will give a big amount at the periosteum of the bone there. And then I'll pull out and actually fan up from my site in many directions into the muscle so that I'm not just getting in one angle, but actually fanning anesthesia, you know, up a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, a little bit further to the left, a little bit to the right in an arcuate manner. So, you know, in a chest tube, I might be going circumferentially for this because I know exactly where most of the pain and pressure are going to be. I'm going to go from my top of my rib in a, 90, 120 degree angle up from there and give anesthesia in all of that muscle. And then I'll actually anesthetize, hopefully the pleural area right there by actually punching in and either getting fluid or air, depending on whether I'm going for a pneumothorax or a pleural effusion. And then I will pull back by millimeters and then see if I could still get fluid and air. And at some point, you stop getting fluid and air. And at that point, I'll give a big slug of anesthesia as well. And I'm always using at least 10 cc's of the 2% and sometimes more. And if the patient seems particularly pain prone, I'll actually have a second 10 cc's drawn up and left in the kit that if I need to re-anesthetize as I'm doing this, I can. All right, so now obviously, you know, full prep, full drape. And I guess I should have said before that, this is one of the procedures where I think a formal timeout is worthwhile. You know, if you were planning on putting in a right IJ and then you wind up going left because the patient's anatomy looked better, there's no reason for a timeout in that because it doesn't really matter which side you went to. Now, you still have to do it if your hospital demands, and obviously you do, but these pleural drainages or pneumothoraces, they're what timeouts were built for, because if you have a left-sided pleural effusion and then the patient winds up with a right-sided pigtail, that's going to be like a never event at your hospital, and your life is just going to be made miserable for a few weeks, and you've caused unnecessary pain and discomfort and potentially even infection and complication to your patients. Unacceptable. So this one is the one, you know, one of those circumstances. Anything with laterality, I want to do a real timeout. So I'll actually bring our portable computer into the room, pull up the x-ray, and then agree with everyone in the room. All right, I'm seeing a right side of pneumothorax. I have that X for my site marking on that right side. So therefore, does everyone agree that we're on the, you know, right page here? And everyone does. And then we could go forward. And so let's actually walk through how I do this. Now, I have a video. I'll link it in the show notes. It'll be posted near simultaneously to this one. So you'll be able to actually see most of what I'm talking about. But I find going over it in words is usually worthwhile as well. So, and you know, I'm sure I'm missing like tiny little pieces, but you'll get the broad strokes and then you'll see the video. Essentially, what I'm going to do after I'm anesthetizing is I'm going to, you know, do full on, you know, re-prep. You know, I'll reprep with the ChloraPrep. You know, even if I didn't touch it, I'll still reprep widely because I generally, you know, just gave a small prep to do the anesthesia. Now I'm going to do a wide prep. You want the patient's arm up and out of your way if you're going laterally. And so I'll actually take a soft patient restraint and put the patient's hand behind their head and then tie that down to the top rail of the bed. And that makes it more comfortable for the patient. It makes me less scared that they're going to drop their arm at just the wrong time. And so that's up there. All draped out. And now I'm going to enter with the needle. And the way you go in is a matter of debate. The easiest way is probably don't hit the rib and then move your way up. Just go directly in, you know, feel where the rib is and go directly over it with your first shot and go straight in perpendicularly to the chest. What you lose on this is any capability of making your wire go in a certain direction. Now, it's very debatable whether that's necessary. Pretty much pneumothorax will drain wherever the pigtail winds up, and most of the pleural fluid will drain wherever the pigtail winds up. So even if the pleural fluid's down below and you direct the pigtail up towards the apex, it still probably will work. But just for the benefit of, you know, elegance, it's nice to send the pigtail where you want it to go. In which case, you have two choices. You could either aim the needle up or down before your entry into the skin. I'm a little reluctant on that because, especially the up, I fear that you may hit something that you don't want to. The other option is to enter perpendicularly, or mostly perpendicularly, and then slightly angle the needle once you have gotten drainage or air. And you know, that is, I feel a little safer from the perspective of hitting intercostals, but then you always are fearful of that knife-like needle tip acting as a switchblade within the chest. So, you know, depending on the size of your landing zone will determine whether I angle my needle at all. Now, you are then having a track different than your wire direction, which is always the recipe for kinking if you go in too far with your dilator. So if you're going to do this, then make sure you're only dilating enough to get, you know, the tip of the dilator into the chest, you know, by a centimeter or so and not going any further. So, you know, your needle's now in, now you place your wire. And for pretty much every wire, you know, the junior residents like to put the entire extent of the wire in and then they have to feed it all back to get into the actual tube you're putting in. It's always about half. That's how all these wire setups work. So, you know, put in about half of that wire, take your needle out. Now, Make a scalpel, Nick. I'm sure the Australians managed to do this without scalpel, Nicks, but none of us are as cool as Australians, unless you're actually an Australian, then you are as cool as Australians. But I like to make a scalpel, Nick. And then you're going to dilate. Now, in the kit I have, it is a one dilation move. So I'm going from the size of the needle, which is an 18 gauge, to a 14 French. So this is a tough dilation for people not good at dilation. See the dilation micro skills video so you could become good, and then see the pigtail video. I actually show how this looks to do the twist and rip, which I think is really key on this 14 French dilator. You can get it done without a twist and rip. If you don't know what I'm talking about, again, see the links just mentioned. But you just have to be incredibly careful, because I found the particular wire in these kits, they make it nice and soft so you don't destroy the lung. It's super easy to kink if your technique's not perfect. And then the dilator tip is super easy to abrade on the rib, which is why in general I try to stay away from hitting the rib and then moving up along it, because I find the dilator tip brushing against that rib top destroys the dilator in these kits. So just gentle, careful dilation. And then the pigtail itself is, it has an internal dilator that straightens it. And this allows you, after you take your dilator out, to put it over the wire. And it's straight at that point. Once you get a reasonable amount of the tip in to the pleural cavity, and there's lines on it to say, yeah, this is almost certainly in. The first line is 5 centimeters past the last holes. So you definitely have the tip in there. I will actually, if I want to advance it any further, remove the internal dilator a bunch so that I know the tip is pigtailed. And I'll take out the wire as well. And now you could advance if you wanted to. You could advance right up to the hub, because you're essentially advancing a totally rounded catheter, and it's fairly safe to advance that. You don't want to advance it straight for any significant amount of space within the chest. That's how you wind up punching things you don't want to punch, like mediastinums. And then you suture it in. They give you a dinky, crappy little, like, I think 3 or 4 oh silk in there. I don't think that is reasonable. So I actually will put a big silk, like a 2, not a 2 oh, a 2 or a 5 silk in the kit. And for me, this is a little secret. Don't hate me. I have no problem using Vicryl for this. The time it takes that to break down, this pigtail will be out of the patient. So if a big Vicryl is all you got, sometimes it's like that in the ED. You only have a big Vicryl. I think that's okay too. Don't yell at me. And I'll suture this in with the knowledge that the suturing is very rarely what holds it in. I'll put a couple of Tegaderms over it, and then these kits either have a Heimlich valve. You could ostensibly send these patients home with the pigtail in and bring them back the next day for a repeat chest x-ray and then pull the whole thing. You could send them home with the Heimlich valve. Or what I am almost always doing is I will attach them to a Pleurovac or whatever the non-brand name for those thoracic drainage devices are in your world. And, you know, these kits all come with the adapter that lets you take this tube and attach it to the big tip of a Pleurovac or other thoracic drainage. Then I will do a tape job on the rest of the tube that's standing out, because it's really the tape that holds these in, the Tegaderm and the tape, not the suturing. All right, so let's just talk about the two special circumstances, and then I think we could call it a day, and then you could look at the video, which will be the next post. All right, so what to do when there's no landing zone, by which I mean, let's say you have a pneumothorax you can't get to, or it's a small pleural effusion that you're worried about, you know, the needle going in there. I will do these semi-open, meaning I will do this as if the beginning of the chest tube. I will make a small scalpel incision, and the scalpel incision just really needs to be the size of your index finger plus the size of the pigtail. So we're talking small here. We're talking like 2 centimeter hole here. I will, and you have to anesthetize even more for this because it hurts more. And we'll do a chest tube podcast, so we'll talk about my real technique for this. But then you'll do blunt dissection with a Kelly or a hemostat down to just at the pleura, or, you know, in more realistically, just through the pleura. And then you'll punch your finger through, make sure there's no adhesions. And then I will actually guide the straight pigtail with the internal dilator in along my fingertip. And then I will, you know, push in a reasonable amount, pull out the internal dilator a little so that it pigs, and then advance it. And I just found this to be a very safe way to go. The actual incision size is remarkably small, much smaller than you would with like a bigger 20 or 24 French chest tube. And it's just a lot easier to get through the hole than a chest tube because it doesn't get caught up on the soft tissue with the open hole of a chest tube. And so this is what I wind up doing. Now, some people may say, you don't need to do that. You could just stick the needle in. I'm not comfortable with that. If I don't have a reasonable landing zone, then I'm doing it semi-open. Cook has told me they're developing a set of hemostats with a wire guide through it, meaning you could do that same thing. You could put your, they would have you because they're, you know, that they're worried that pulmonologists won't use fingers, that they'll just punch through with the special hemostats and then put a wire through it. What I would do more likely is punch through with the hemostats, put my finger next to them to make sure they're actually in the pleural cavity, and then advance the wire through the internal structure of the hemostat, because there'll be like a little tube there. And then you could take the hemostat out and just finish it in the semi-percutaneous mode. And I will be curious to play with those. What I have done at other times is used a cut-down tube exchanger. You just grab a pair of sterile scissors and cut that bad boy in half. And this is also allows you to very easily, in something even softer than the dilated, the internal dilated pigtail, place something along your finger exactly where you want it to be, and then put the wire through that. So all of these are techniques for no landing zone. The last thing I will talk about, because it's a response to Josh Farkas's beautiful PulmCrit post on how to safely do thoracentesis, is to say I do not do thoracentesis. I mean, I'll do diagnostic thoracentesis, of course. I'll stick a small gauge needle in there and take out my fluid for diagnostic purposes, but I don't do drainage thoracentesis because I think that's dumb. It takes a long time. I have to sit there, do push, pull, push, pull. I have to worry about, you know, this negative pressure crap and all these things. Josh says maybe you don't need to worry about it. But here's what I do. If I have something that I want to drain that I would ordinarily have done a thoracentesis, I just put in a pigtail. It could be the same 14 French. I also have an 8 French pigtail I could use. I'll just put the pigtail in because that takes me as long as it takes to do the initial part of a thoracentesis. And then I will hook them up to a pleurovac. And then if I am done with my drainage, nothing else is coming out, I'll just pull the pigtail. Now, this has a couple advantages. One, I don't need to stay at the bedside. Two, no risk of, you know, or I shouldn't say no risk, no real worry if I cause an iatrogenic pneumothorax, because it just means I won't pull the pleurovac. I will just leave it in until there's no more air leak, and then I will pull. And so I don't have to worry about that. And then there's really no worry about negative pressure, because if they've had a long-standing or super enormous pleural effusion, what I will do is I will not put them on suction, because now I am actually generating negative pressure in the chest. And I will just put the pleurovac on a bed rail, so it's at the same level as the patient. So now I'm not worrying about the actual gravity-induced suction. And I will just let them drain on their own, knowing that when their lung doesn't want to expand more than it already has, it just won't. And I'm not going to cause negative pressure pulmonary edema by forcing that trapped lung to open up. So both for a long-standing pneumothorax and a long-standing pleural effusion, I will just put in the pigtail and let it drain. I will put the pleurovac up near the patient's chest and let it drain, knowing that this is safe. Now, some would argue that that's still not safe. And Josh talked about this stuff in his post that, you know, the old school pulmonologists when I was taught are like, nope, you can't take out more than 1,000. And then it was 1,200, and then it was 1,500. And then you got to clamp the tube. And then I started working with CT surgeons. They're like, no, we don't abide by that crap. We put it in a chest tube and we just let it all drain. And they didn't seem to have any higher incidence of negative pressure pulmonary edema, both from the studies and the anecdotes they all told, than the clamping. And so I think that's just silly. But I do think, I really think that if you're forcing negative pressure into that chest, trying to pull a lung that doesn't want to open up with a syringe, that may be deleterious. So I just avoid that all entirely. All right, a lot of stuff in there. If you're not placing pigtails, and you're still doing chest tubes for pneumothoraces or for simple pleural effusions that you want to drain, I think that's not fair to your patient. This technique is very much in your ballpark. You might want to have someone teach you just the first time after watching something like my video or someone else's video, like Larry Melick has some great stuff as well. Then, you know, after that, this is basically, it's a central line or a dialysis catheter. It's all same moves. Once you know the relevant anatomy, which you probably still do from doing a chest tube, and know how to do Seldinger, then this is something you could do. And it's just really, really better for everyone involved, you, the patient, the people upstairs. You know, we could admit a pigtail to medicine. We can't and have them manage it. Pulmonology will manage it. They don't want to manage chest tubes. And now I have to get two services involved or admit the patient to a surgical service. It's a hassle. So this, I think it's a great way to go. Send me your questions. Tell me what I've missed. Tell me what I said that you disagree with. Remember, Reanimate 2 half-price tickets are available. Join the mailing list right now so you'll get the next message that'll be sent out in a few hours. And buy the Resus Crisis Manual because it's finally available again. Scott Weingart from the MCRIT Podcast saying bye-bye.